This week's podcast, we caught up with Rod Colley, project manager at Microsoft and the leading light in Power Pivot. We talked about it on the desktop and on the SharePoint server. This interview was recorded on the 18th December 2009. Okay, so we're joined today by Rod Colley. He's a lead program manager at Microsoft and has recently been working on the Gemini project, the Power Pivot project. He's a self-confessed Excel geek and all-round data enthusiast. And he's also a hockey player. Rob, I was reading your biography on your blog, Power Pivot Pro. What sort of hockey are you into? Field hockey or ice hockey?
Actually, neither. I played a lot of inline hockey on rollerblades and then played a little bit of ice hockey.
Right.
And quickly discovered that there was a huge difference between the two different kinds of skates. So, inline hockey, that's my thing.
Specialist in inline hockey.
Indeed.
Rob, obviously we've got you on today to talk about the Power Pivot add-in for Microsoft Excel 2010. There's been a lot of buzz around this in the last few months. Do you like to sort of start us off by perhaps telling us a little bit about where it's come from and a little bit of the background around Power Pivot?
Sure. There are a few different ways to look at it, and sort of intentionally, there are, you know, depending upon what audience you are and sort of what your background is, there's different ways to approach it and different ways to think about what it does for you. So if we start with Excel professionals, we call, you know, Excel gurus, power users.
Yeah.
There's a whole host of things that it does for those users. Some of the benefits are geared just around one Excel user working on their desktop and never sharing things, just sort of for their own benefit.
Yeah.
And then there are other benefits that accrue to them as they start to interact and share their data, their results more socially. So, just a couple of quick examples of that. Excel today is limited to 1 million rows per sheet, and Power Pivot is not. Power Pivot, we've done demonstrations on regular desktop machines with 100 million rows of data. So the data capacity is vastly expanded. There's a multi-table capacity. Like Excel, all of Excel charting and analysis is done on one table at a time.
Mm-hmm.
There's no notion of linking multiple tables together in Excel to a more unified model of things. And Power Pivot lets you just hook tables together. SQL experts, database experts will know this as joins. Excel experts might just think of this as an accelerated VLOOKUP, that instead of going column by column writing VLOOKUPs to flatten everything into one table, you make one linkage, which is just as simple as writing one VLOOKUP, probably a little bit simpler. And now all of those columns from tables are available to you. So imagine a multi-table pivot table, for instance.
So the actual Power Pivot itself is an add-in to Excel 2010 only, right?
Yes, that is correct. It relies on a number of things in Excel 2010 to make it work properly. So yes, it's 2010 only.
Is some of the sort of the base class libraries, if you like, are they from the analysis server team? Have they been leveraged in developing this add-in?
Oh yeah, so I'm actually I used to be a member of the Excel team. I worked on Excel 2003 and Excel 2007, but now I'm actually a member of the SQL Server Analysis Services team. So Power Pivot is, it's a collaborative effort between the analysis services team and the Excel team and also the SharePoint team, which we can talk about later. But
sure.
But yeah. Yes, the add-in itself and the database engine underneath the add-in, all of that was developed on the analysis services team.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, I think that's important to recognize, isn't it? Because that gives the version one a sort of almost a version two or three status, doesn't it? Because that code has been sort of tried and tested elsewhere.
Oh, that's an excellent point. And additionally, you know, I think one of the, you know, the things that we might get around to talking about in this chat is that this analysis services engine has been around so long, it has an incredible an incredible calculation engine for pivot tables. And
right, okay.
And that engine has been evolving now for at least a decade. And turning that loose in Excel users' hands is something that we probably should spend at least a minute or two on at some point.
Cool. Yeah, the calculated fields and that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I mean, we've touched on it already, but we've kind of got the add-in itself, and then we talked about the SharePoint and that side of things as well. I mean, it's fair to say there's two sides to Power Pivot, if you like, isn't there? There's the SharePoint side and the desktop side.
Yeah, that's correct. You can really think of Power Pivot as two separate add-ins, You can install the client add-in that we've been talking about up until now. You can install that. That's free, and use it as long as you want. It's not it's not restricted. And you might decide to stop there, but then there's also an add-in for the server, and this is where the group collaboration, publishing, and more of what we would, sort of call traditional business intelligence type mm-hmm. activities, where that takes place. So. It might make sense to just take a quick step back and say that we're really, the real purpose, and although I expect there'll be lots of different adoptions of Power Pivot for different purposes, but the core purpose of Power Pivot is that out there today, there really are, amongst the hundreds of millions of Excel users in the world, there's quite a number of them, certainly millions of them, that serve as sort of like a data publishing pro for their for their teams. So they're the ones that go and cobble together data from lots of different places. They produce these Excel reports, and then they publish them. They share them to other people, and it might be as informal as emailing them or dropping them on a file share or something like that. And that's sort of the center of mass that we're aiming for, is those users, and making their lives a lot better, a lot more, a lot less hassle, as well as adding a lot of new capabilities, while at the same time allowing those activities to become their work, to become a lot better sort of corporate citizens, a lot better for example, IT very often views Excel as a virus.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of benefits in this for both the Excel user and sort of the IT staff, in that these Excel apps, like the problem with Excel, and I hate to say that there's even a problem with Excel because I love the product so much, is that these files, these spreadsheet files themselves, they're very, very hard to manage and track and update fix. And it's a problem both for the Excel user, the publisher, as well as for the IT staff, because IT doesn't necessarily even know what Excel applications are out there and that have become critical to the business. So there's a lot of depth there. We don't have to go into all of it, but I really do see Power Pivot as a new opportunity for Excel users and IT to cooperate rather than simply resent each other.
Sure. I mean, that's like one of those issues, and I think there's a couple there, but one of those issues is a thing that we call sort of versionitis, isn't it, where the guy in Tokyo has got version 1 and you've updated it to version 1.2, and yet another guy's got version 2 or something. So you've all got slightly different pictures of the truth. And I think Power Pivot will probably help resolve some of those issues.
Oh, yeah. So that's a great, great focusing point. So, yeah, I mean, when your Excel reports are floating around as files, that means that literally they're multiplying daily, multiple versions. People can be modifying them, saving them on their hard drives, and there's some convenience with that. But with Power Pivot on the server, with the server add-in, when you save one of these Power Pivot workbooks, and it is all one file, all of the Power Pivot database gets embedded in the Excel file, so it's still just like it. I think of it as an Excel file with a really powerful set of pivot tables in it. And
okay. How does that affect file size?
There's obviously it stores the data in the file, so it makes the file bigger. But when you compare it to the same file size impact of the pivot cache, the sort of the built-in pivot cache in Excel today, it has a much smaller impact on file size than what you'd expect, because the Power Pivot engine has amazing compression. That these, oftentimes you'll have a, like I forget how big, but the 100 million row file only ends up being, I think, like 50 or 100 megabytes. It's not that large, and 100 million rows is really kind of.
That's a lot of data.
Yeah, that's top end sort of for what you would expect. So I mean that same compression is still used in memory as well. So when it's not like we unzip it into memory to make it and it becomes huge. Whatever the size on disk, is this also the size that we need in RAM?
Because that's because of the architecture of the database, and perhaps we'll touch on that later. But maybe it isn't. I don't know. But because one of the limitations with pivot tables is the amount of the memory you have to have on your machine to run large pivot tables, right? I think is it limited to like 25% or something like that? Is it 50%? There's some limitation around the cache size that you could use.
You know, off the top of my head, I don't know what the limitation is for pivot caches.
Yeah, I think I've blogged about it sometime in the distant past. I have to confess that I've never ran into the problem with it myself, but maybe if you're dealing with huge data sets. So that's good news. What are some of the – we sort of jumped a little bit onto the server side when we talked about sharing files there a little bit. I mean, as you've mentioned already, there's the Excel add-in itself and the server, the PowerPoint, the SharePoint server as well. What would you need to set up the SharePoint server? Is this all SharePoint 2010? Will it work with older versions of SharePoint, or do you have to have it all 2010?
Again, it needs to be 2010, primarily it needs to be 2010. Well, there's a lot of features of SharePoint 2010 that sort of in the base platform that Power Pivot takes advantage of. So, for instance, like the new claims authentication, we use that.
Right.
But also it's also important to know that you need Excel services as well. And Excel services 2010, we need that version because again, it's the server version of Excel client. And just like we rely on features of Excel 2010 on the client, we rely on those on the server. So, for instance, the new graphical slicers feature that is a filter for one or more pivot objects in your report. That's a brand new feature in 2010, both client and server.
Right.
And that's pretty crucial to the overall experience. And just to even be able to open the files, Excel 2010 on the server needs to know how to deal with this new embedded database format, just like the client does.
Sure. So in terms of the stack that you'd need on the server, you'd need the SharePoint and the Excel services. And is there anything else, or is it those two things that you need to be running on your server?
Well, it's just those two things, but really it's one thing, and it's the Microsoft Office services for SharePoint. So it's the Moss flavor of SharePoint. There's two flavors of SharePoint. There's SharePoint Lite, and then there's the sort of the robust version that Office produces, and that contains Excel services. So if you have Moss, then you're good to go. And you can install this. Power Pivot for SharePoint just on a regular regular box, just to try it out, like on your desktop or whatever. We have lots of instances of that running at Microsoft, for instance.
You need the SharePoint services, Microsoft Office SharePoint server, and you need the Excel services. And then you need to put the Power Pivot add-in into that as well, into that stack?
That is correct, yes. And there are a lot of guides out right now on how to set this up on a single box with the beta. So if you wanted to try it out today, you can. You can visit my site, powerpivotpro.com, and I've got links. If you look at the beta links, there's links to all of the different add-ins and downloads, as well as a link to one of the members of the community has put together a great guide on how to get the server set up. So I have a link to that as well.
Okay. Now here's a bit of one from a bit of left field. If I was working in a sort of office and I had, I don't know, 100 people in my office, maybe a call center or something, could I put it on just the standard PC that was linked to the network? Would it work like that? Could I run the SharePoint services through that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So we do intend, there's sort of two different flavors of the PowerPivot and SharePoint server install. There's the departmental flavor, which is geared at exactly the kind of scenario that you're describing, where just a machine that's on someone's desk or in a closet somewhere, you know, I can just set that up and configure it. In fact, you know, we do this at Microsoft. When we do an install, most of the time we're doing one of these departmental installs because, well, it's just fun. You can play with it and configure it on your own desk.
Yeah.
There's all the enterprise flavor where, in another example at Microsoft, we have our central IT department has provisioned, you know, just tremendous amounts of central SharePoint servers for us. You can just go to today at Microsoft can go and request a new SharePoint site be provisioned, and I have it basically immediately without having to install any servers myself. And that's the enterprise deployment of SharePoint. And there's a way to install PowerPivot into that environment as well, so that people can go and get PowerPivot sites provisioned.
So I mean that sounds to me like it's been really well thought out, because a lot of the users probably which are interested in PowerPivot will be guys that have an access database or an SQL server sitting on a networked PC somewhere, you know, working as a sort of poor man's server.
Yes.
So that the fact that we can do that out of the box and it's been designed to do that seems like a really good idea to me. What in terms of the more in the cloud type server aspect, i.e., you know, people off-site and perhaps clients logging into it as well, what are some of the, well, I suppose it goes for both flavors of it as well, actually, but what are some of the things that we can do when we have it up on the server? What are we adding to the sort of party in terms of BI and stuff like that? What are the things we can do with it?
Just with the server in general or in the cloud specifically?
I'm just thinking in terms of I've got it maybe loaded onto my desktop and pushing reports up onto the server and updating those reports and that type of thing and distributing them perhaps to everyone or to limited people and things like that.
Okay, cool. So the number one thing is as an Excel user is that your Excel document that you produce that's got your reports in it, when you publish it to the server, that becomes it becomes very much a web application. It looks like something, it has the feel of something that was programmed in C# or something like that and then deployed to the server, as opposed to just saving a file to a document library, which is what you do. So you get a number of benefits, and the core benefit is that now you get your users, your consumers of the data, no longer have to have the workbook itself. They just go to a URL in their browser, and then Excel Services renders the report with full fidelity in the browser, and they can interact with the data. They can filter it, they can drill down, they can sort, they can do all that kind of stuff. So they can consume the report in an interactive manner. And the server is issuing queries, Excel's server is issuing queries to the PowerPivot server, all behind the scenes, and then returning the results to the browser. So it's a web application, and I can set it up such that my consumers can interact with it without giving them the ability to download the workbook. So it gives me a lot of security advantages, obviously, in terms of things walking away accidentally or otherwise. I mean, even before in terms of versionitis, there is no versionitis. Everyone goes there, and if I've updated the data or I've changed a calculation or fixed a bug, whatever, doesn't matter. The next time you hit that URL, you are going to get it. You know, I don't have to push it to you or go and make sure that you're not still using an older version on your desktop and things of that sort.
Is it possible to, so I know that the data now is saved in the workbook on my server and the user can access it, interact with it. Is it possible now for me to say, right, okay, I want to set up this particular workbook so that it fetches, refreshes the pivot table, the power pivot model once a day or once an hour or something like that? Is that possible?
You've done your homework. Yes, indeed. You can scheduled refresh is one of the is kind of I think of it as sort of the maybe the second most valuable feature, second or third most valuable feature on the server. In that, yeah, exactly.
Right.
Like today, if you produce these reports, you're not just the author of them, you're also the the person who's responsible for turning the crank whenever new data whenever new data comes in. So, and that's that can consume quite a bit of your time. And if you're out of the office for a day or a week or whatever, whole business processes can grind to a halt in your absence. Yeah. So you'll be getting phone calls on vacation and things like that. And yeah, so you can once it's published to the server, you can say you can go and set it up again just using a SharePoint configuration page. It's all very simple in your browser, and you can say, you know, for instance, this report should refresh nightly at this time or no earlier than this time, and things like that. Yeah, you can schedule the refresh frequency, and then the server will just go and automatically grab data from the data sources that you used, and recrunch the report, regenerate the report, refresh it, and your users will just see the latest without without any hassle at all.
So I mean that's a pretty cool thing, because you can do that presently, but you have to write a load of code and it gets a bit messy and you're never 100% sure whether or not it's actually ever worked and all that sort. And like you say, it's the point about the guy that designs a report also has to maintain the data and make sure it's updated, and it's easy to forget something like that. I mean, that sounds like a real win to me for that sort of scenario. What in terms of now I'm thinking sort of dashboard type stuff. Do we have all of the? Do we have full access to publish onto the SharePoint server everything we can do in Excel, or is it like a subset of charts and functions, or is it fully? Are the two things fully intercompatible?
Well, the Excel services is now this is its second version, and it supports a lot more features of Excel than the first version did. Like when we sat down to do Power Pivot, we made sure that if you flip back over to the Power Pivot client add-in, we made sure that everything we did in the client add-in as part of the as the core experience, all of that is 100% full fidelity on the server. So, I mean, there are a few things that Excel Services doesn't support. So, for instance, you get these sometimes these really rich plastic type textures on your charts in Excel client. Well, those don't those don't render like that on the server. So, but your charts still render. They just don't render with that that plastic or metallic appearance and things of that. So, but yeah, the slicers are there, the charts are there, the pivot tables are there, the conditional formatting is there. VBA is not there. So if you put VBA macros in your workbook, VBA obviously was not designed to run in server environments. But yeah, I mean the things that you would want, like images, stuff like images were not supported in V1 of Excel services. They are now supported in V2. So
Can you run VSTO code in it? You can run VSTO code programmed against your workbook. Would that work?
No, because it still uses the COM interface,
object model. Okay.
And that's not something that's really server safe. There's a lot of that's not to say that Excel Services isn't a programmable platform, because it very much is, and I've linked to a number of articles from my site. Back to like the Excel Services blog, for instance, that talk about their new APIs, and there actually are some incredibly cool APIs. It's a whole separate topic. Maybe we'll talk about it another time.
Sure. Yeah.
But as a sort of a one sentence summary, the playground and the amazing capabilities that came out with VBA many years ago, and sort of spawned a whole new community of development. I look at the SharePoint platform now, and I see the same sort of thing beginning to happen there. It's a different language because, of course, it's all about web servers now. But the same sort of less formal but still very powerful programming to cobble together applications that people wouldn't believe possible. That kind of thing is now happening with web apps on SharePoint, and I'm very excited to see what happens there.
Yeah, I agree. I was having a very similar thought process earlier, actually, although I didn't compare it to VBA. I was thinking about access for some reason, but that's your analogy is much better, I think, than the one I had, but exactly the same sort of thing. It's it's a lot of new power's not the right word, but there's a lot of new tools which are coming along with SharePoint and Power Pivot, which will enable business users to do more exciting things, more powerful things going forward.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, totally.
So we've talked about the server side of it there. And I don't know, I'm sure there's a lot of other things we could talk about on it. Dropping back onto just the desktop add-in. Mm-hmm. So just take the server side out of it for a moment. What are some of let's sort of discuss that a little bit. Let me ask a question. Why would I use Power Pivot? Because I can do everything I need to do today with Excel pivot tables, Access or SQL Server, and a bit of VBA. What are the advantages of me using and getting into Power Pivot?
Well, I mean, I think there's sort of two classes of it. Now, if you literally are 100% happy with what you're doing, you can't imagine any of it being any faster or easier or better, then no, you probably don't want Power Pivot. But I don't really think that there's ever an end to things that can be improved. So, I think you need to sort of just kind of take a look at what Power Pivot offers at a sort of at a top level really quick, and then decide whether that applies to you. And I mean, me as an Excel user, and I've been an Excel user for a long time, I find Power Pivot's capabilities on the client to be very exciting. So we mentioned before data capacity. So if you want higher data capacity and smaller file sizes, then okay, there's one reason to adopt. If you want to get out of the business of 1,000 VLOOKUPs across multiple tables, there's another example, because you actually have relationships now. If you find yourself building reports that are more than one object, they're not just one pivot table at a time, and you want them to function sort of as a unified report with a shared set of filters, Power Pivot does that very, very well on client as well. And then I think another class of benefit is the notion of the new calculation engine that we've added to pivot tables as part of this.
Right.
You can do amazing things with calculated fields in pivot tables that you've never been able to even scratch the surface of this in the past. And so it takes a couple of seconds to, as you're playing with it, to start to take off the blinders. You know, like we've had such a limited capability for calcs and pivot tables for so long that I don't even think we've really started to ask, well, what's possible? And when you see what we do in pivot tables with calculations, it's crazy.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the exciting things to see what people start doing with all of the new technology and features when this thing gets sort of out there in the wild. Mm-hmm.
I do for one quick example. I do one post recently on my site where there's a new function in Pivot. By the way, all the Power Pivot formula language, we call it DAX, is very much Excel syntax. So you don't need to learn anything new. You really just need to learn new functions. There aren't that many new functions as well. We use a lot of built-in Excel functions.
Let's talk about DAX for a moment. That DAX language, do you write that? You write that in the Power Pivot add-in when you're building the model?
Yes, that's correct. So, but you do it in places that are appropriate. So, if you've seen the Power Pivot add-in, there's really kind of two halves of it. There's a Power Pivot window that is, and again, it's all tied to the same file as the Excel window. So it's kind of, in a way, it's like the VBA window. It has the same sort of relationship. There's two windows, but they save into the same file. The Power Pivot window contains all of the sheets, all of your source sheets. You know, you do this today. You make a bunch of sheets, and then you build pivot tables against those sheets of data. And so those source sheets are contained in the Power Pivot window. And so you can write formulas there. So you write calculated columns there. And there's a formula bar just like Excel, and you start typing equals, you get autocomplete and all that kind of stuff. So, you're doing it in the add-in, but it is very much built to look and feel like Excel, and the gestures are very similar. And the other half is you go over to the pivot tables. When you're building pivot tables, all of the sort of the end visualization, all of the reports that you build in Power Pivot are strictly built in Excel. So the Power Pivot window is not involved in the visualization side of things. But so there's still some new tools on the ribbon that are added by our add-in that, for instance, you can click a button, say, you know, new measure, which is adding a new field to your pivot table, and a dialog pops up. And again, in there, you're typing in an Excel-like language, but it's crazy what's possible in that dialog.
So then if I set up – now, in the Power Pivot add-in, when I'm organizing my data, I set up what's called like a Power Pivot model, right? So it describes how the data links together, and it's got my calculated fields in it and any filters I've applied to it, something like that. Is that how it works?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that you can approach this as an Excel user, just thinking about it as, hey, I've got a new type of data sheet. Instead of regular sheets, I can put tables on a different kind of sheet now that have new capabilities, like being able to link them together and things like that. Yeah. You don't need to think about it as building a model. You really can think about it as just building the types of things you build today with just a little, almost like a 5 to 10% difference in terms of how you do it, but not very much. It is producing a model behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Like if you're a SQL Server analysis services expert, I can tell you that the Excel users necessarily know it, but they are building one of these OLAP database cubes behind the scenes. But we don't use any of that lingo, any of that nomenclature at all. So it just feels like you're building. It's almost like I've described it as Excel +++. It's what it's meant to feel like. It's not meant to feel like database modeling -/.
Sure, absolutely. It sounds to me like this is the approach in a sort of, you heard this concept called Axel or XS, you know, this thing where you get the sort of best parts of Microsoft Access and the best parts of Excel and sort of bring them into one product to really be able to deal with data, but also have the sort of really usability and presentation features that Excel has got. It sounds to me like we're getting towards that. Which is a good move, I think. In terms of the two windows, if I was, say, working on some report or something, could I then go back into – so I've set up my Power Pivot work there and it's open. Maybe I've closed that window now and I've done some pivot tables, produced a couple of charts and maybe done something else in the workbook as well. Can I then go back into that that Power Pivot window and change a filter, and will that update back into the workbook?
So basically, if you go back over into the Power Pivot window and make changes and then flip back to the pivot table side, you'll see our field list and our pivot table field list. We take over for the Excel field list, and we have our own pivot table field list that's part of the add-in. Yeah. That pivot table field list will let you know that there have been changes back on the model side. And then there's a button to click to have those become reflected in what you're looking at. What we don't want to do is have every change over in the modeling window, the Power Pivot window. We don't want that to constantly be triggering refreshes on the Excel side. Because if you end up with really large data sets and lots of reports, that might have to interrupt your workflow. But specifically about filters, sorting and filtering – we have an auto filter type interface on the top of every column in the Power Pivot window. And that sorting and filtering that you do there is actually just a navigational tool to help you explore the data on that side and to verify that your formulas are working in various places and things like that. It does not actually – those sort and filters are just a visual aid on that side. They don't actually reflect back into your reports at all.
Okay, so if I was filtering, say, on country, in a table, and I filtered to UK only, and then I built my pivot table on that, I'd actually have to filter out in my pivot table by UK only as well.
That's correct. I mean, if you want your if you want your model and all of your reports to strictly UK all the time, then what you should do is you should filter at import. So when you're actually pulling data into the Power Pivot window, we have there's another auto filter type interface there. If you're pulling data from a SQL Server, for instance, you can filter to UK during the import process, and then that obviously is persistent.
Yeah. Okay. Now, in terms of is the Power Pivot model always linked to the Excel workbook? Could I set up one Power Pivot model and put it and then attach it to different workbooks? Is that a possibility?
Yes and no. So, I mean, by far the core scenario is what we call the one file scenario, the reports and the model all packaged in one file. Now, when you publish to the server, in addition to being able to look at the reports and interact with them in Excel services, you can also connect to that file as if it's a data source. So, if you're familiar with OLAP databases today, which not everyone is, and that's okay. But if you are, the query interface against Power Pivot is exactly the same as it was against previous versions of analysis services. So if you have you have another client out there, another client application, a visualization application that knows how to talk to analysis services today, and by the way, Excel does. Excel has an OLAP pivot table capability, and ProClarity does, and a number of tools. There's a lot of tools. Not all of them are Microsoft. Anyway, you can provide those tools with a connection string, and the connection string is just the URL to the workbook. And now, instead of looking at the reports in the workbook, you're looking at the data source, the model that's been built in the workbook. And you can visualize there. So reporting services, for instance, if you use that, reporting services can now use one of these Power Pivot workbooks as a data source. So there is certainly a high degree of reusability in these models. But it's not like you don't extract the data model out of the file. It just is already.
You'd kind of like, sounds to me a little bit like in older versions of Excel, you could create a cube, from an import. It'd be similar, not dissimilar to that.
Yes.
You'd create the Power Pivot model and save that Excel file and then base other Excel files on that if you wanted to. Okay, I mean, that's cool. In terms of so probably got a couple of things that I'm interested in talking about now. In terms of the DAX language, that's nothing like, say, XSD or anything like that. It's much more like formulas, isn't it? And you write that directly into Power Pivot, or can you also use that in the Excel client window?
Well, it is first of all, yes, it is very much an Excel style syntax. So it starts off with equals and then typically a function name and then open paren and all that kind of stuff. So I mean, and actually, like for instance, we have the concatenate function in DAX, and that
What does DAX stand for?
data analysis expressions. I think it's chosen to stand for something as well as just to be a fun thing to say. So the concatenate function, as an example, is the Excel concatenate function. We worked with the Excel team and took their code for the concatenate function and used that to implement the DAX version of the concatenate function. So it is 100% the same code, same results. The Power Pivot engine is a different engine than the Excel calc engine. And so,
Is I'm guessing that it's all managed C sharp, is it? Or is it C++ or something that's written in managed C++?
well, the Power Pivot engine itself is highly optimized code. So it is written in native code, C++, things like that. It is not written in managed code. The add-in is written in managed code. But the calc engine is meant to, think about this thing is meant to handle, potentially hundreds of millions of rows and crunch those very quickly and produce pivot tables out of them. It needs to work very close to the hardware. So yeah, it's written in C++. So but yeah, so it really is an Excel language, DAX. It's just that you can't just go into a regular Excel sheet and start typing it into a cell. Excel's calc engine doesn't have all of these capabilities, but it's meant to be, from a user standpoint, it's identical. Except that DAX also adds a bunch of new functions that you don't have in Excel. So, for instance, in the Power Pivot window, there's an equals related function that lets you grab data from other tables, and it has a very similar impact as VLOOKUP, but it's a lot faster and a lot more convenient to use.
Okay.
And then on the pivot table side, when you're building pivot tables and you're adding calc fields to pivot tables, you're working in a special dialog which has a formula bar in it, and there are functions there that did not exist in Excel. So, for instance, there's a whole bunch of calculations for helping you navigate time. So if you want to write like a year-over-year growth parallel period or prior period or a running sum or something like that, all of those things you can do now in pivot tables.
Okay.
And which you couldn't do before.
Sure. Yeah, that's the calculations in pivot tables have never really been a happy story, I suppose, have they? Doing calculated fields in pivot tables has always been a bit sort of awkward. It's never really worked. I know they sort of had an attempt in 2007 to sort of add a bit more power there, but it's never really taken off, has it?
Yeah, it's been. You think about it from the Excel team's perspective, it's actually a very difficult challenge because the pivot table calculation engine is a completely separate calc engine from the calc engine that operates in Excel sheets, and so both of those require a lot of attention. So it's a dual investment and very difficult for Excel. You know, Excel team only has finite resources, so
sure, yeah.
So you think about it that way. And then the analysis services team shows up and basically says, well, here is our pivot table calc engine. And it's been evolving for 10 years as like their number one priority of the analysis services team, as opposed to being sort of the secondary calc engine. So it makes a lot of sense.
And it's all together, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense that it comes together that way.
Yeah. Now, when we're writing the DAX, do we write that sort of it's in cells? And you talked about it was in the dialog there on the sheet. But is it also, do you sort of express it as functions and copy that down? Is it done like that?
Well, you can do it in the dialog for pivot tables. So there's really two places you write DAX. You write calculated fields in pivot tables, and you write calculated columns in the Power Pivot window. And so it automatically fills down. You can't have a cell-by-cell formula in the calc column sense. It's just it automatically fills down. So it's a lot like the table feature in Excel 2007 and in 2010.
Yeah.
But even more formalized.
And then how would you reference other fields? Is the syntax like it's not a cell reference. I'm guessing it's a reference to a column, table then column, is it?
Yeah, it's all named reference. So whatever your column, every table has a name, and so it's 100% named reference, and you don't have to create named ranges to do it. It's just automatic. So yeah, it uses that. If you've seen it, it uses the square bracket syntax for column names, and it we also have table names as well.
Cool. We've talked about how small the file size are given the size of the data and sort of speed of performance and stuff. Now I'm on a bit of shaky ground here, but I understand that the architecture of the sort of if the database, if you like, of the Power Pivot uses is it called a columns architecture? It's slightly different to a cube and slightly different to a sort of normal relational database. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean the when we started out we were calling it an in-memory database because and I didn't really realize this. I've never been on a database team before, but databases really are, traditionally, have always been heavily disk-oriented. So they're just – databases are file I.O. devices more than anything else. And I didn't realize this, but just that means that historically databases have been designed very, very specifically around the limitations and constraints of this physical rotating disk and a physical mechanical seeker head like that. And so moving to in-memory certainly has the benefit of being faster in general, because you're not, you know, memory transfer speed is much faster than hard drive transfer speed. But but even more than that, once we got in there, and I'm not really so much associated with the architecture of the engine, but I was around when everyone was building it, and I know what they were doing. Once it was in memory, started to discover that there were all kinds of other things that could be done. So the reason why databases are laid out on disk row-wise today, row by row, is for fetch, because of this mechanical limitation. You don't want to be jumping all over the place.
Sure.
But RAM doesn't have that problem. You can fetch a row from multiple different places, no problem. So in PowerPivot, in memory, the database is stored column by column instead of row by row. And
right.
When you think about a column, there's a lot more similarity between values in a column than there are similarities between consecutive rows. So
for sure,
compression literally can just go through the roof once you're in a column oriented world versus a row oriented world. And all of that was brand new to me. My inner geek got very excited learning about all of that. It just seemed like something straight out of college, you know, back in computer science school. So it was really cool.
There's a bit of an opportunity there for someone who's going to try and sell this into the business to talk about that, blind them with science, that type
Indeed,
of stuff.
Indeed, Thomas Dolby.
I like that. Yeah. I've just got one question, one more question. I think we've probably just scratched the surface, and I think as we sort of, anyway, as the community starts to gain a bit more experience on this type of thing, it'd be great to catch up again. But one thing that I'm thinking about now is the 64-bit and the 32-bit. Are there two versions for PowerPivot, or is it just the one version? How does that work out?
Yeah, we have a 32-bit client add-in, and if you're running 32-bit Office, then that's what you want to install. And there's also a 64-bit add-in if you're running 64-bit Office. You know, I recommend the 64-bit version if you have the choice, because it takes advantage of more RAM.
Sure.
And but if you're running 32-bit, no problem. The 32-bit add-in works fine. And for the vast majority of desktop data volumes that you'd be dealing with today, it's great. It works just fine. It's really if you want to start expanding beyond data volumes that you typically use today, that you want to be in 64-bit.
Yeah, and is there any speed increase over that, or of using 64-bit, or is it just in terms of the amount of numbers you can crunch?
I really think it's more in terms of capacity. I mean, I've seen lots of different, just in general between 32 and 64-bit, I've seen examples of things getting faster in 64-bit and things not getting faster in 64-bit. It kind of depends upon what's going on, but you really shouldn't think of 64-bit as a speed increase. Think of it as a capacity increase.
Sure. Okay, Rob, well, it's great talking to you. Thanks very much for that. No doubt we'll catch up again sometime to discuss more about PowerPivot and inline skate hockey.
And thanks for having me on, Ross. It was very nice to talk to you.
Great. Thanks very much.